Support comes from Strategic Farm Marketing, sponsor of the annual customer seminars. This virtual or in-person program will provide tools for the demands and challenges of managing a farm business in today's environment, along with updates on the latest federal and private crop insurance products and new program ECO, Enhanced Coverage Option.
This is the February 4 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett from AgMarket.net, Jerry Goodell of Midland Research, and Garrett Toy of First Choice Commodities. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online, listen to us on demand, anytime you'd like at WILLAG.org. And at this time of year, it's important for you to scroll all the way to the bottom of that page and you'll find the calendar of events. The Farm Dog team just kicked off a series of winter meetings and you can join us. It's easy, probably easiest, that is, just to go ahead and find willag.org, scroll down to the bottom of the page and hit that red link in the calendar. It'll open up a place where you can cut and paste the registration page. And you'll be registered for all of them. They'll include things like ECO, the ARC PLC decision. We did that this morning. PPP was done last week, but you'll, if you do this, you'll get links to the YouTubes on those as well, so you can stay up to speed. We'll also talk more about crop insurance decisions later in the series as well. So make sure that you get yourself signed up. Easiest way, I think, is to go to willag.org, but I might buy bias that I want you to see some of the other ag programming from us as well, or you can go to farmdocdaily.illinois.edu. Now, let's get a list of items from our panelists that we might want to discuss for the day. They include Matt Bennett. He's from agmarket.net. Thanks, Matt, for being with us. What's on your list?
Yeah, I just want to discuss amongst the three or four of us, I guess, you know, what adjustments might be made in demand next Tuesday, how that puts carryouts, first of all, and then, you know, second of all, given new crop prices, old crop prices, just how aggressive the other guys think, you know, some of the producers need to be when looking at the markets that we have today.
Jerry Goodell, your list?
Wow, you took all the good ones. The interesting issue is this, you know, South America, where do we think their crop really is at? At this point, we're going to get an update on that next Tuesday from the government, but and that, and I, you know, in the other situation is, like Matt mentioned, I would look at that new crop situation out there. I think those are definitely some things to look at. There's some definite scenarios going on in the weather trends longer term. We just have to look out at the plains in the U.S. and say, what the hell is going on out there? So, you know, that's going to move into the Midwest. We don't need that.
Garrett Toy, how about from you?
Yeah, I think it's always kind of interesting to discuss what carryout, you know, we've got the crop report next week, but what carryout is the market actually trading right now in both corn and soybeans? I think the big thing we need to kind of look at here is, as we've had this recent uptick in the dollar index and the dollar, and what could that do? If anything, maybe it doesn't matter what the stocks to use ratios where they are. Ultimately, I think, you know, with February crop insurance pricing periods here, the focus is going to shift to new crop and what new crop S&D scenarios potentially look like.
Well, let's start where Matt Bennett suggested with adjustments to next week's demand. And maybe the three of you can just jump in wherever you want to here. But Jerry Goodell, when you look at next week, what do you think USDA will do? Because there seem to be a whole bunch of places that they might work a little mathematical magic.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And I think the one thing you got to come into these things, and ultimately, I think what happened with some of the averages, got a week ago and things really fired up on the Chinese corn buying and things like that. Way we're talking, you know, 400 million increase in the exports and stuff like that. But the USDA tends to make things in steps on the adjustments. I understand you, this amazing number we got today, 292 million export sales in 1 week, blew the doors off of anything it really had from a standpoint of a normal week of sales. Even our rollover week was 191 in 2009-10 when we did that rollover. And so we're, but the interesting twist, we had China's in there. We also end up having, you know, Mexico, Japan, South Korea, unknown. We the gamut of all our big buys all came in 1 week. So that's the interesting thing. Will they go that far up? I'm really just looking at 250 myself. And then I also think we're going to get some imports out of Canada. So I'm looking at a number at 1.35 number, a little less than actually the trade average guess that came in today from Reuters. But I think the analyst basically took an idea saying, well, yes, we know that it's going to be potentially strong in that, but let's also see if we can get this out the door. That actually comes out to an average for the rest of the year of over 63 million bushels, or is it 68? I just calculated it. I think it's 68 million per week for the next 30 weeks. That's a heck of a thing to be going for. So that's the corn side of this thing is, I think, a step down, seeing what happens in South America. If Safrina corn goes south on us, then that number is not right, and it's going to go lower significantly. But I think the USDA is making that one step down from there. I'll let somebody else have the beans in a week.
Why do we think, Matt Bennett, that the Chinese are buying?
Why do we think they're buying?
Yeah, what are they needed for? Is it hogs? I mean, these are big numbers.
Well, I mean, they definitely have increased. They've increased corn into the rations. But, you know, you look at a couple of different places in China, you know, at what prices look like. And to be honest, I can't even pronounce one of the names of the places that we, but one of them is the Guangzhou. And they're talking 1160 corn earlier this week is basically the price that they're paying interiorly for corn. And so you look at the U.S. Gulf at 640 a bushel, you know, in that neighborhood. And so obviously they've got to ship it over there. But bottom line is, I mean, it's cheaper than what they've been, what they can source themselves. And so, you know, whenever we also look at China buying all the ethanol, 200 million gallons that the, you know, ADM had indicated they'd bought. Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's a pretty significant amount. It tells you that, you know, their corn supply may not be quite what they've said it has been all along. I'm a firm believer that USDA is way too high on Chinese corn supplies. And so, in my opinion, I think that they need the corn, and they need good quality corn, you know, better than maybe what they've got available, especially in regions of the country. So it'd be very interesting to see how that's handled. I think whenever you look at the carryout levels, I'm actually pretty close to what Jerry's talking about. I mean, we came in at 1352, I guess, for our official estimate. You know, we bumped our exports up to 27.25. So we got back the 100 that they took away last month and then went up another 75. But I've got to think that the true number could be north of that. But then again, I'm like, Jerry, who knows if we can get them all shipped this marketing year? I think there's a lot to be learned there.
Garrett, you're a stats kind of guy. What numbers are interesting you?
Well, I mean, the original question about what's happening in China, I mean, don't forget they had, you know, they had some questionable production issues last summer during their growing season. you had the edict from the government to try to, because of food inflation, to try to cut down on waste of food. It goes as far as limiting how much food you can purchase at a restaurant, that sort of thing. And then a couple of years ago, we also had the fraudulent, you know, municipalities, you know, overstating how much their stocks were so they could get government money. And I think combination of that along with, you know a rebound and their hog production. I mean, you do the equations as far as how much meal they're consuming and how much that translates into corn. You know, it's a combination of those things. As far as the USDA report is concerned, I mean, this market, you know, if you look at corn spreads, it's trading at 2012-2013 type number, and that's a 1-1-1-2 type carryout in corn. In beans, it's trading like it should. 13-14 analog. The only question, that's the tightest stocks to use on record. You know, I think there are some people out there that may think that this old crop bean carryout is negative at this point. You know, it that remains to be seen, but I think the question is I think everyone on the forum is aware of, you know, how the USDA likes to dance with some numbers. Is, you know, in 13-14 they set a pipeline carryout number, and that was 150 million bushel, and they stuck there for several months, even though the data suggested otherwise, and basically just let the market figure it out. You know, and you know, that's the $64,000 question I have. I mean, typically the February WASD doesn't offer much fireworks typically, but you know, there could be some disappointment if the USDA decides that, you know, hey, our pipeline's 140 and that's where we're going to stay, even though the monthly changes in statistics say otherwise.
Yeah, but isn't USDA tasked with figuring out what's going to be left at the end of the year, and supply price, demand, all work together to leave something there? I mean, I'm not sure that USDA is supposed to come out with a 65 or a 40 or an 80 million bushels left, or negative 20 or whatever you want to come out with, because there's no way that the market would go there, right?
Right. No, I mean, it's a exercise in futility. I mean, in reality, I mean, if you want to argue that, you know, they put more weight on the quarterly stocks reports than anything, and you know, we know how reliable those have been the last 18 months.
You know, I totally agree that the idea of them actually, if you really look at this, you know, usage rates and shipment rates and all that kind of stuff, wow, you know, why did they only go up 30 last month? They should have went 50 or 75 and all this other stuff. But really, we have slowed down to some extent for this week. We did end up having a 30 million actual sales, which it really does make things quite interesting. But the one thing that happens right in front of us here, 3 weeks from now, 4 weeks from now, 7 billion bushels of beans will be starting to be hitting the markets on a worldwide basis. That's just a figure that we look at things in billions of bushels. They look at metric tons, and metric tons for 130 plus a 50 million number all of a sudden gets you that kind of total bushels that's available. Even if we lose 5 to 7 million metric tons, that's a huge number. That's what I think is what potentially going to buffer us right here for the next little bit in here as we try to figure that out. Now, at the same time, we've got to make sure we get prices high enough to get the number of acres, and got to figure out our new prices and a bunch of other stuff. But I think that's maybe a reason why we might see, and I used a 140 number myself, because I didn't think the USDA and the people I know at the World Board, their strategy on this stuff tends to be just as Gary mentioned, they stay at the same number a while and don't always change. So I guess I'm in Gary's world saying this thing might not change this month. That doesn't mean I don't think that there's a reason why it should. It's just that I'm projecting what the USDA is going to say. I don't like these people that go out and says, I think it should be this at the end of the season. That doesn't help anybody when you're looking at a USDA report. I like to try to give them my best guess what the USDA is going to do, not what I personally think it should be, because nobody cares what I have to say other than the fact I say it, and maybe I'm right, maybe I'm wrong, but at least the USDA is the only one that really counts, unfortunately.
Yeah, Todd, I think that whenever you're looking at the bean situation, essentially with this Brazil crop coming online a little bit later than what it did last year, you know, we may end up shipping a few more beans out. And quite frankly, like Garrett said, we might be looking at some people looking at a negative carry. What the USDA is going to post, I think, is anybody's guess. But we've got to think that if we do ship out more beans here on the front end of this thing, which is pretty much a foregone conclusion, I think, we got to figure out where all the beans are going to come from next summer. And so I've got to think, whenever I'm looking at our balance sheet, for instance, got to think about bumping up imports actually just a little bit, whether it's, you know, soybean imports or soybean meal into the Southeast. But I do think that there's going to be more imports than normal this year. And it's probably going to be a function of the fact that we had to ship a few more beans out here in this February timeframe than maybe what the market was expecting. So, you know, I don't know what the USDA will come out with next this month, but you know, I think that it'll probably come down from 140. I know that you're getting to a baseline type situation where they probably don't want to come down a whole lot, and I don't think they care what the general public thinks, you know, obviously. But at the same time, I've got to think that they're at least going to come down a little bit.
Well, Garrett, what number are you using, and what should producers, and this is really the bottom line, whether USDA's numbers is right, the market's going to trade some number, and you've given us a couple you believe that they're looking forward at this point. What number are you using, and more importantly, what is it that producers need to do as they're thinking about new crop corn and soybean sales?
Well, I mean, yeah, what I think farmers should do and what farmers are going to do are two separate things. Because I mean, after what happened, you know, this past fall and you know, everybody thought they were getting decent prices or getting an opportunity in soybeans and $3 and $4 later in some places, you know, some people were able to get, you know, get re-ownership. Some people were not. And it you know, it's just, it leaves a sour taste, you know, a sour taste. So, you know, obviously they're, you know, producers I've talked to, obviously people want to talk about hedging a little bit more now, but, they're putting pressure on themselves to do better job marketing in 2021 because 2019 and 2020 have not been that great as far as profitability levels. So they want to make sure that they don't miss out on the boat here. But they also need to reconcile with, you know, what's happening. And to go back to the original question, as far as, you know, what kind of numbers are we looking at? You know, in reality, you know, we're at a 3-1 stocks to use, you know, with a 140 carryout. We're tracking really well with 13-14. So I mean, that's a 2-5 stocks to use type ratio, and that's under a 100 million bushel carryout. I mean, it really, like Matt said, the only thing that really matters is in the U.S. is originating soybeans from May to August, because the only way we're really going to solve this situation in the U.S. is early planted beans and early bean harvest. You know, it's going to be one of those years where, you know, there's going to be a sharp cash premium for first half August beans. And it's going to try to incentivize producers to plant early season beans and try to capture that inverse. It, you know, what is, well, 13, 14, 15, 16. I mean, up until, you know, 16, 17, 17, 18, you know, that's the kind of way the market was, you know, and that's the only way to really solve this equation, is it's going to be new crop beans that are going to be, you know, used in old crop.
There are other options, and you mentioned them, Matt Bennett, early on, which is that there could be imports of U.S. soybeans. What's the likelihood that those will come into the Southeast?
I think that they'll come in. It's just the, you know, the functionality of it. I mean, what does it cost to get them up here? Obviously, it's going to be limited in nature, but and you know, you're going to see some feed alternatives for sure. You know, I think that there's parts of the world, especially, you know, you get into some of the plains areas, and producers, I'm talking to a couple of guys that have 60 to a dollar over basis on corn. You know, some of the guys that they're friends with, for instance, in Southwest Kansas, I've talked to people that are trying to figure out a way to put wheat into the ration easily, and it's not an easy thing to do, but you know, there's going to be some alternatives that are going to float around there. But do I think we're going to get imports? I do. I mean, we're using 40 million bushels as an import number. I believe the USDA was 35 last month, and so that's not probably that outlandish of a number, but I certainly think that, you know, for comparison's sake, I think 2019 they were at 15, and so and that's a more normal number. So, you know, it's nothing extravagant, but it's certainly quite a bit more than what we generally see.
What should producers do today, if anything, about corn they have in the bin? Doesn't matter where the storage is, or maybe it does. And Matt, I'll start with you on that one.
Well, if they've got corn in the bin, they've been handsomely rewarded for sure. You know, one thing that I don't want to do is, you know, personally, I don't want to lock in basis if I'm going to hold on to the corn. I think that the basis is certainly going to have to stay fairly robust if the market drops. I'm not super bearish old crop corn by any means. I think most of the people I talk to in the origination industry have a little bit of apprehension moving forward. I think getting past this early onslaught, you know, of January corn and some February deliveries, you know, the basis levels when you get farther on out, for instance, in our part of the world, pick up another nickel to a dime. And so I think that shows you that the market's a little bit concerned. So obviously next week, it'll be very interesting. If you would drop your carry out down to a 135, it's going to keep the corn market at least supported for the time being. I guess I got to feel like if I've got corn in the bin, though, it sounds like I'm talking pretty friendly, and I'd say I'm supportive and friendly. But good Lord, it's really hard for me to look at 570 cash corn in this part of the world at this time of year and turn my nose up at it. After what we've come out of the last 6 or 7 years, it just makes no sense. And so I want to at least get some sort of, you know, I want to scale into this and sell some bushels as we go. I think it makes a heck of a lot of sense. If you're going to complain about 570 corn, I just think you're completely missing the point that, you know, of the last few years.
I agree with Matt on basis. I mean, I think there's going to be two periods of the year where the merchandiser is going to be, and ethanol is going to be nervous, and that's when we get into spring planning, and the farmer is going to have zero interest in selling any corn or delivering any corn, and then into the end of the year, into that you know, that July timeframe. But there's no real incentive. I mean, I see. You know, I tell you that the spreads are acting like 12, 13. You know, you're looking at 550 corn. Is this a 12, 13 flat price year? No. I mean, I think some of Matt's compatriots have used 2008 as an analog. You know, as far as 2012, 13 is concerned, the difference is crude was $100 back then. You know, so I mean, the question you're looking at yourself is, you know, are we talking the difference between $5.50 to $6 corn, or are we talking $7.50 corn? You know, I think that's what we're really looking at as far as, you know, probabilities, right? And I don't know how much more upside. You're going to need some help from the outside markets. You're going to need crude to get going, you know, higher than $55. You're going to need some help. So as far as looking at probabilities and whether this is a profitable level, the market's not giving you any carry, especially if you've got any commercial storage. So, I mean, it's the market's trying to get you to sell, but that's also part of the commercials trying to get a little bit more ownership for later in the year. So, you know, I think the odds are here for the near term is 550, 575 board price or 575, $6 cash price. You know, is probably going to be in the top 25% of your probabilities. And if you need to come back in here and have some re-ownership, so be it. But, you know, just because a lot of things can change. As we saw in 2012, basis went crazy high. You know, some outside influence or world market may influence flat price, and it may be up to basis to do the work at some point.
Jerry Goodell, on that note, do you suppose that the marketplace at this point has put any weather premium into the corn market related to the second or Safrina crop in South America? And because the weather patterns have been changing there, does that come out, and does it come out very quickly?
Well, I personally, a lot of people talked about it. We've heard about this particular phenomenon, the delayed plantings in the beans, and that was going to have an impact. You and I have had this conversation in Chicago at the high school, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, and all of a sudden now everybody's talking about it. And that, I'd have to say, though, because of the Brazilians down there and the attitude that, don't worry, it'll always come out in the wash and this kind of stuff. We kind of said the same thing in the beans. I still don't, not sure the 133 is really there, but it's not a 120 crop either, or a 125 crop. So it's, you know, it's, that's a situation, same thing. But I do think that is a major factor if we're going to have a chance, as people have just discussed, getting over this hump of $5.50, $5.75, $6. That has to be the feature in this thing. And the fact that, you know, at this point, we're still, I think the last I've seen from one of the ag rural, I think we're under 5%, and we're normally at 20% on harvest down there in Mato Grosso. In Mato Grosso and that type of thing. And that's where the big chunk of beans, we've got some delays coming on in Paranon and Rio Grande from the point of view of too much weather, wet weather situations. But the key feature in this whole thing is, when does does Mato Grosso start taking stuff to the Amazon and taking it to Santos? That's the two places they're going.
Matt, do you agree on that, that in order to go very much higher in the corn market, it would require that there actually be a weather or acreage issue out of the safrinha crop in South America?
Yeah, I mean, the thing for me is that crop's going to go in the ground, of course, just a little bit later than maybe what they would prefer. It's not like it's excessively late, but when you talk to producers down there, I talked to some guys last year at the Farm Futures Conference, and, I asked them what their biggest fear was when it comes to their safrinha crop, and they said when the dry season creeps in just a little bit too early on the backside of that second crop. So, I think that it's something to watch closely. If this market is going to push to levels above six, I kind of agree with what these guys are saying here. That's why I want to be selling some corn. But, does the possibility exist that you would have a weather issue out of South America and or a production issue out of the U.S.? And obviously that issue always exists. And this would be the year where you could have some significant fireworks. Obviously we've got some dryness out west. There's things to at least pay attention to. But at the same time, whenever you're looking at extreme profit margins for the 2020 crop, it's pretty tough for me to just sit here and put everything on betting on the come on prices. So, I got to say that the smart money, in my opinion, is quantifying your situation as much as you can right now. But keeping some bushels around, for later on, I think makes a lot of sense.
Put my two cents in about the okra percentage wise. I've been scaling up. I've got about 20%, 15-20% left, basically every 50 cents or thereabouts. Wish I'd stopped selling back in August like we all did, back then. From there, on the corn side of things, new crop wise, Western Iowa prices out here, 450 D's doesn't get you much over $4, on new crop corn bids out there. From there, I'm in that 20% level out there myself. And that's where this whole thing, we're going through some very interesting times out in South America, and also what might occur here in our own weather patterns going on in the spring. Hopefully we don't have this 94 million or 97 million like we had last year on corn numbers that came out of the blue here on us for a March 31st number, which ultimately went down, completely down to under 91 the time we got to the fall. But we are going to have expanded acres out here all over the place. I guess the big question in my mind on these acreages is the fact that I don't know if we're going to get all the way back to 2014. There's a lot of people throwing those numbers out there. I can definitely say we're back to 2 years ago, maybe even over 2 years ago's numbers that we had for plantings. But the idea that we're going to, fence row to fence row, the talk's there. But I'm just saying that right now, milo looks so much better than looking at corn out there in western areas of Kansas and all across there. Same thing on wheat. We planted too much wheat out there. If they didn't plant 700,000 more acres of wheat in Kansas, I'd be a lot more optimistic about milo and corn, but I can't. I go to the Dakotas, I got a PP acres coming in, but that's, we need to look at the actual numbers, not just go back to some crazy numbers from, 6 years ago or 7 years ago. Well, we got to go back there. Well, you might, but I'd have to say, let's be cautious on how much we're going to get, how many acres and how much we're going to get out of these yields, because those are not the best acres in the world to get us the best yield. So,
Garrett Toy, there was a time that the United States was the place where the world had to come for corn, certainly. For some time, soybeans even. That's no longer the case because there are other places to do that, which means the U.S. dollar has more to do with the export market than it has in the past. You wanted to talk about that a little bit. What are you watching?
Well, this dollar index is traded to, it's the highest level since early December, late November here. And, it's pretty close to getting back above this 92 level. We benefited in this grain market with this early January dip down sub 90. But I think that anything, back towards 92, that's going to put an onus on the USDA to print some better numbers. To some extent, to some extent, you watch price action this week. I don't think it really matters because the S&Ds are tight enough. The market hasn't really paid much attention or reacted as much as what it may have. But it may be enough to kind of keep a push from 5 cents or $6 out of the market for the time being.
Let's wrap up now. We'll get a final word from each of you. Matt Bennett from agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. What's your final word for the day?
You know, I think that we got to take a look at these prices and, you know, try to take ourselves back to before the rally started. What do you do with prices like these whenever we were hoping for $4 corn and now we're snuffing our nose at $5.70 corn? I don't know. It makes sense. I think as a producer, we have to quantify not only a decent amount of our old crop situation, but some worst case scenarios on the new crop situation, both corn and beans, because by doing so, we could lock in some profit margins that we haven't seen in several years.
Garrett Toy from First Choice Commodities out of Stockton, Illinois. Your final word?
I agree with Matt. I mean, we're at historically high levels, and if 550 corn and 1350, $14 beans, picking up pennies in front of a freight train is kind of the old adage here. But I think that the one thing to keep in mind is, while the arrow does look like it's improving for COVID, we have to kind of keep an eye at another headline out this morning about food price inflation and these high unemployment numbers. You have to wonder if there's some long-term negative impacts of these rising food prices and still relatively large unemployment tied to COVID.
And Jerry Goodell from Midland Research in Chicago.
Yes, it ends up that I think it's an excellent idea of making sure that people, this is not the time to bet half your crop and say, oh boy, and we're going all the way to the $8 and it's guaranteed and all that kind of stuff. No, these are times when guaranteed, we can all fantasize about, well, we're going to have a problem in South America with safrinha corn. We're going to have a dry spring in the U.S., this kind of stuff. But having a good incremental type of sales portion out there, and $4 cash corn, I kind of, made note of it for people in Illinois that's not the price that they're having to look at a new crop. But it's a situation where that it's all relative. And to some extent, that price point is, definitely so much better than the $3 prices we were staring at last May and June, on new crop corn and things like that. And even the derecho was really the turning point for us last summer. And all of a sudden people started looking around and figuring out, well, maybe it's not all what we think it is. And then the Chinese start buying. It can be dynamic as hell. But at the same time, you just mentioned about the idea that big crop is coming in soybeans ahead of us. And all of a sudden things can switch dramatically here and go the other way. But at the same time, there is definitely lots of things to keep an eye on out there, folks, and keep your ears to the ground about what's going on in safrinha corn and what's going on in the western parts of the Midwest and what's going to happen there. We've got a lot of decisions to make and how many acres people plant and all that between now and March 31st. It's going to be an interesting and choppy world, it looks like to me.
Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like. You can do that on our website at willag.org, willag.org. And if you scroll down the page now, you'll find the calendar of events. It has our daily broadcast schedule on it. If you open those up, you'll find contact information for the analysts that are regularly scheduled during the closing market report and the other programs for the day. And in red, you will find the latest events that I'm emceeing and hosting. They include the Farm Doc Winter Webinar Series. If you've not gotten yourself scheduled for that one, two of them have already taken place. This morning, we talked about ARC and PLC. Last week, PPP. And coming up, we'll talk more about crop insurance and we'll talk about the acreage decision. And it's all free. And you can find a way to register just by opening up those links. Just hit those red links and you'll find a URL that you can cut and and paste and get yourself registered. Once you're registered for one of them, you'll be registered for all, and you'll also get information about how to see the ones that have already been posted to the web. Commodity Week, again, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Our thanks go to our panelists, including Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net, Jerry Goodell from Midland Research, and Garrett Toy of First Choice Commodities. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.